Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com with me, your host, Tim Stillman, looking ahead once again to a massive WSL game on Friday night under the lights at Stamford Bridge, this time Chelsea versus Arsenal. I think this might be the first time the teams have played at Stamford Bridge. I certainly don't remember another occasion where that's happened. Time of recording on Tuesday, there's 30,000 tickets sold, so I'm sure, you know, hopefully that will tip more towards the 40,000 mark and we'll have a nice big crowd and everything like that. But clearly a massive game, I think, for both clubs, particularly because I think we're just about still in a three-way title race, although, I mean, we'll go into this in the episode, but I think Arsenal really at least must not lose to keep, to stay on the kind of outskirts of that title race. But as we've often done before, and it has to be said from an Arsenal perspective, with some success, we're going to look ahead to this game with Counterpressed and The Athletic's Jesse Parker-Humphreys. Jesse, thanks for joining us against your best instincts.
Yeah, every time I come on this pod, it's a monumental jinx. You seem to only ever, I don't know how you do this, you invite me on for the games where Arsenal win, and then I'm not on the games where Chelsea win. So something's really working for you on this.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately for our listeners, I do have different plans for the Conti Cup final preview pod, which I'll kind of go into a little bit at the end. But nevertheless, Chelsea versus Arsenal. We're recording this on Tuesday morning, so one of the things when you're kind of equally interested in the men's and women's teams is you kind of have to pass all your anxiety a little bit. So something's been really helpful for me is that Arsenal men have a very big anxiety-inducing game this evening, which has kind of allowed me to not think about this too much. However, going to have to think about it now, Jesse. And obviously, we'll turn the focus onto Chelsea a little bit here. Now, what Chelsea are going through at the moment, and when I use the phrase what Chelsea are going through, that kind of, you know, indicates some level of trauma. It really reminds me, I think, quite a lot of maybe what Arsenal were going through this time last year in terms of, despite the depth of Chelsea's squad and of any squad in the world, there are just one or two players you cannot replace. Like for Arsenal, for example, when Leah Williamson is out, that's it. Like there isn't another Leah Williamson, so you have to find another way. And I've thought for a long time there are two players to whom that applies with Chelsea, and that's Millie Bright and Sam Kerr. And obviously Chelsea are in a position where they've lost both of them. I mean, Millie has been going on for a while, and I think we can all see she probably dragged herself through to get to the World Cup, and maybe that exacerbated some issues. But obviously Sam Kerr as well, and both who've been very durable players that Chelsea haven't had to do without. Before we go into some of the things that were done in the transfer market, maybe to amend for their absences, how would you say in general that Chelsea are coping with this at the moment?
I think given the importance of those two players, the fact that Chelsea are competing on all four fronts and are at this point realistically favourites for the FA Cup, I'd probably give City as favourites for the title, but you know, like Chelsea are right there with them. I think that is testament to the squad depth and sort of how deep the players have been able to dig, despite obviously they had Kerr for the first half of the season, but you know, Bright not for any of it. And I think to that extent, some of Emma Hayes's previous work has come really good. You know, I think the improvement that Jess Carter's made over the past couple of seasons has been absolutely crucial. It's allowed Chelsea to basically cover up the fact that obviously their big centre-back signing of a couple of seasons ago, Khadija Buchanan's basically been a total flop. Neve Charles's development has also been really important as well. And that's kind of allowed Chelsea to at least rotate their fullbacks because they've brought in Perisse and Lawrence over the past couple of summers too. So I think obviously for me, the Kerr one is the one that feels like, I do agree that Millie is really crucial. And obviously she was made captain as well. And I think that is also, they're not only just, they're good players. It's that Chelsea made Bright captain after Eriksen left. And then once Bright got injured, Kerr took the armband. And then by January, we're rotating it between Aaron Cuthbert and Neve Charles. And I think it's very clear that Hayes is Jurgen Klopp-esque thinking about legacy a lot at the moment. And, you know, she's kind of said that for her, developing those kind of players' leadership skills is something she wants to leave Chelsea in inverted commas. But the reality is you're still looking at kind of like a 24-year-old and a 25-year-old trying to lead a team through to a quadruple. So I think there are a lot of different issues, both in terms of like leadership and then quality of play. I do think moving quickly for Ramirez was a sensible decision. I wasn't like, Chelsea should definitely go into the market. That wasn't my position at all. But given that she was obviously a long-term target and they felt like they could get her and get her quickly, now what's happened to Mia Fischl, it feels essential. And then I guess the positives from that is, you know, they have players like Kat Macario now coming back to fitness. There's some suggestion that Bright will be available for the end of the season. So I think from a Chelsea perspective, it's this month, which is so jam-packed full of games. And
31 days and I think 32 games by the looks of it for Chelsea in March.
And I think getting through this and being in a position whereby potentially in April, Macario is maybe ready to start, Bright maybe is back, and then that will allow them to push through the kind of final 2 months of the season.
Yeah, you referenced the January transfer window there, and obviously Ramirez was brought in. Natalie Bjorn as well was brought in from Everton. Going to start with the Ramirez signing, though. Like you said, given what happened to Mia Fischl, you know, kind of crucial. But it kind of feels to me like, particularly with the size of the fee paid, that, yeah, short term, it kind of reminds me of what Arsenal did with Pullover last January, which was basically that was going to be a summer signing. And they got so many injuries that it was, you know, it was a case of, look, we need bodies in the squad and we can probably bring this forward. That feels to me like that was a signing that was brought forward. And maybe that in the long term, my feeling from the outside is this is more about, you know, Harder's gone, probably Fran Kirby. Her role looks like it's reducing and not, just, I don't think, for fitness reasons, that I feel like that's a kind of, okay, we probably need this player now because of Sam Kerr, but long-term Macario, Ramirez, Kerr, you know, with Bieber Jones thrown in, that actually her long-term is probably to replace Kirby. Do you think that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Chelsea were interested in both Myra Ramirez and Alba Redondo from Levante and had sort of long-standing interest. And it feels like maybe they were waiting to the summer to see which one exactly they went to. And then because of what happened, they were like, fine, we'll push the button on Ramirez. I do think it leaves Chelsea with an interesting squad building issue, especially if Kerr is staying, which was obviously reported and then has gone totally dead. So I don't know what the hell is happening with that. But let's assume she is, given that's what was last reported. Once Kerr and Fischl come back to full fitness, so let's say we're talking around this time in next year, ostensibly you've got Kerr and Fischl, who both want to play just as nines, realistically. You've got Macario, who can play as a 10, but has sort of throughout her career said she kind of wants to be a nine. And then you end up with Lauren James. So she's holding the 10 spot anyway. So there's not really much room to move Macario. And part of me wonders if Redondo was the signing that maybe would have made more sense for the squad as a whole. Because when you look at like Wrighton and Canarid, okay, you've got Aggie Bieber-Jones coming through. And maybe she will end up as a nine as well, although I think right now she's much better on the wing. But there, it's the winger positions, which I think if you're looking like the next 2 or 3 years, that's what Chelsea are going to have to develop. But instead, it feels like they've ended up with this big glut of central players. And I'm quite intrigued as to how exactly that works out, because I don't know how you play Ramirez, Kerr, Fischl and Macario. And maybe like you can discount Fischl because she's like the worst of the four, but Chelsea paid a hefty fee to get her literally 6 months ago.
Yeah. And I think it maybe did feel a little, I don't know if odd is quite the right word, but to spend that much money on, you know, the backup, as it were, for Sam Kerr, which didn't really exist in any kind of serious way. And I kind of think we're seeing that now with the kind of deluge of false nines and things like that, that immediately after Kerr's injury, perhaps she wasn't entirely trusted. And whether that's just because, you know, a lot of Chelsea signings do this, right? They need like a year or so to really adapt. But it did feel to me a little bit peculiar that there just didn't seem to be that trust in Fischl, like you said, given the money put down for her.
Yeah, I wonder if she came in at a slightly lower level than maybe the club were entirely expecting. I do think the Mexican League is a really interesting one at the moment, because I think in and of itself, people really enjoy it, players do really well, but it feels very hard to benchmark, I think, across the rest of Europe. And I do think the general view seemed to be that, yes, Fischl scores goals, but she's very, very raw and it's a different level. And I think to that extent, Chelsea probably felt, we'll pay the money for her because we think there's great potential. Like, you're not going to like turn your nose up at someone who is scoring that many goals at a league that is still at a high level, even if it's not WSL level. And we're going to have her sort of sit behind Kerr for the season, learn from Kerr. She'll get minutes in cup games. And we're kind of happy for her to take sort of a loss on minutes because she's played so much earlier on in her career. She can kind of have that season. And I can kind of see why in January, when the Kerr injury happens, they go, okay, well, we've had her at the club for 3 months and realistically, she's just not ready to do that. And to that extent, I think, well, the initial Ramirez signing is fine because it would have left Fischl in the exact same position. You play kind of backup to the main striker who we think's better than you and readier than you. And I think Ramirez clearly is that for Fischl. I think just on the long-term front though, and I don't know how much uncertainty there was with Chelsea about Kerr signing, because obviously, you know, we'd reached January, there hadn't been a deal done. If there has been a deal agreed, it seemed to happen after the ACL. So I don't know how much Chelsea had to be like, we're hedging our bets, Kerr might go in the summer, we need all these players. But I think the problem is if Kerr stays and comes back at the same level, that's when you're like, there's now too many of them.
Yeah. And I kind of think Arsenal went through something a little bit similar with Viv Miedemann, not really knowing if she was going to go or not. And they did some January business in 2022, like bringing in Stina Blackstenius. And, you know, I think that was a little bit hedging the bets as well, just in case. And then Viv ended up staying and then got injured anyway. And yeah, essentially what I'm saying is I really think that Chelsea are on like a 1 year timeline lag from Arsenal, basically, like experiencing a lot of the same issues. And in that respect as well, the other kind of January signing, Natalie Bjorn, who, you know, plays alongside Amanda Illestet internationally. But the difference here is like, so when Arsenal signed Illestet, that was, you know, Leah Williamson's going to be out. There isn't another Leah Williamson. Illestet is available. She's 30 years old. She played under Jonas Eidevall before. Kind of a short-term signing. You know, whereas I think what's interesting with Natalie Bjorn is you referenced earlier about Kadisha Buchanan not really doing it so far. And that left centre-back spot has been an issue, I think, for Chelsea. And I think what's interesting is Natalie Bjorn, if I'm not wrong, usually plays on the left. So again, that feels to me like a long-term, we want her as the partner for Millie Bright that we just haven't been able to get since Magda Eriksson kind of left, or not just left, but her role reduced as well a little bit. So to me, Natalie Bjorn, that looks like a signing that was perhaps brought forward as well as a kind of, okay, we're without Millie, let's get this player now. again, is that the feeling you got, or do you think it was a bit more opportunistic than that?
My feeling is that that was potentially a bit more opportunistic, although I do think just generally, obviously, Chelsea are, you know, very extensively aware of the market. I just think given the Real Madrid links, there was never a guarantee for Chelsea that she was going to be available in the summer, and that they would be like that. That makes me think that maybe they were like, oh, okay, like, let's just go in and give Everton exactly what they want because Real Madrid won't. But the reality is, if Real Madrid had, then she'd have gone before Chelsea even went in for her. I've been really impressed. I was quite unsure about the signing. And I do think it's interesting sort of looking at like her age profile and kind of what she's achieved. She's obviously very experienced, but without necessarily, I think, always performing at the highest level. I think, though, she's looked really good in the Chelsea team. I think she's added like a good amount of calm, and that maybe was the attraction for Chelsea over looking to bring in someone who was more like in their early 20s. I guess like the other interesting links or targets that the people were looking at were Lacroix or Kleinhörner or someone like that, who I think it would have been a very different experience. And all of this business, I will say, I think has to be taken in the context of that Emma Hayes is going. And I think Emma Hayes will have happily said, I need this player. I need this player. I don't care how you figure it out after I go. Like, buy them for me. And I think, you know, Chelsea as a club, given what Hayes has done for them, are probably happy to go, sure, take them. We'll figure it out later. And, you know, none of these are bad players, but I do think it is, again, going to be interesting in terms of how it does get figured out. I think what's good about Bjorn and what will be attractive about her, and this is kind of true with Ramirez, because Ramirez can play out wide as well as being a nine, but, you know, we've seen Bjorn, for example, play at fullback for Sweden. She's played in defensive midfield for Everton. That does allow, I think, a little bit more versatility. You know, she's not someone who you can only stick as the left-sided centre-back and leave it as that. So it will be interesting, because Chelsea have, I think, over the past couple of years, really prioritised versatility in that back line. You know, if you think about Carter's success, it comes because she will happily play in any of those four positions. I still think she's probably a back three centre-back specialist. I think that's where she's best. But, you know, she's made herself invaluable to Chelsea because of that. And I think Bjorn will play a similar role. Also, Emma Hayes is just obsessed with Swedish players, and like has historically really relied on them to build her team. And, you know, as soon as Bjorn signed, she was kind of saying, oh, like when she got here, I told her like she was arriving at a similar age as Magda Eriksson, and, you know, that's the kind of role she could have at Chelsea, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess looking to the game on Friday, Natalie Bjorn hobbled out of the game against Everton, in the FA Cup, and seems to be the way things are going for Chelsea at the moment. If she can't play, because obviously Millie Bright's not going to be able to play, do you think, I mean, by process of elimination, that really only leaves a Nushkan Carter centre-back pairing? Is that what you envisage, and do you have any... I don't think I've seen those players play together. I didn't see the game on Sunday, so I have no preconceptions about that, but do you think that's how Chelsea will go if Bjorn can't play, and do you have any reservations about that?
Yeah, I think that is the way they will go. Chelsea obviously would have a couple of other options, but I don't think they'll be used. Buchanan is obviously back, but I don't see her starting against Arsenal. And the other option, I guess, would be Ingle, is someone who has played at centre-back before. But Carter and Nuskan started together against Manchester City, which I think tells you that's the one that Hayes feels like is the best if, you know, if those other players aren't available. Bjorn was obviously cup-tied for that game, so that's why she wasn't available then. So to that extent, if Bjorn is injured, there is at least that kind of feels like a benefit that pair have played together in a very high-level, high-intensity game with a very good striker to defend against and managed to keep a clean sheet, albeit Chelsea rode their luck, I think, at times to keep that clean sheet. I really like Nuskan at centre-back. I don't actually really have any qualms about it. I think it's very funny because when she signed, Emma Hayes was like, I'm never going to play her at centre-back, obviously after she'd spent the entire season doing it for Eintracht and been seen as one of the best players in the Frauen Bundesliga doing it. Obviously, Germany used her there a lot as well. And I was like, there's just no way we don't end up seeing Nuskan at centre-back this season. It's just like inevitable. But yeah, I think she's a really talented player and she's been used literally all over the pitch this season. But I think centre-back really suits her. I feel like we saw in the Emirates game that she maybe still has a naivety in midfield that kind of allows her to, well, leaves her turning the ball over a lot and getting basically a bit rattled. And I think that's something Chelsea really struggled with in that Emirates game. Whereas I feel like when she's at centre-back, it's a bit like the Jess Carter thing in some ways, where you're like, okay, your decision-making's not necessarily the best, but if you plonk them down and say, just defend, just tackle, yeah, don't really think about doing anything else, they both look, I think, quite good doing it.
Yeah, and that kind of comes on to the next thing I was going to ask, really. Like, I watched that City game. Like I said, I only saw the highlights of the Everton game, but it does feel like Chelsea have done quite a bit of kind of go 1-0 up, stay compact. I think that's definitely what happened in the City game. Actually, from an Arsenal perspective, as much as a lot of Arsenal fans might be feeling like Chelsea are vulnerable injury-wise, and I think they are, I think that's natural. At the same time, I have this anxiety that Chelsea go 1-0 up and stay compact Chelsea might be more dangerous for Arsenal than the version of Chelsea we saw at the Emirates in December, for example, because, you know, you don't have to have watched a lot of Arsenal this season to know that these games have not been that much of a problem for Arsenal when there's a little bit of space in behind. It's the games where there aren't. And I wondered, first of all, is that a fair characterisation that Chelsea have been doing a bit of, you know, go 1-0 up by any, like maybe a bit of Lauren James magic or something like that, or Guru Wrighton maybe smashing one in from 20 yards or whatever, and then kind of hold on a bit? And how much do you think that's been, quote unquote, the plan, and how much necessity, really?
Yeah, I think one of Emma Hayes's best attributes as a manager is she will get to a point in the season where she kind of goes like, fuck it, I'm playing to win. I'm not playing to make
my team look nice. She's not an ideologue.
No. Yeah. And some people don't like that. And I understand. I think it really suits Chelsea. Like, I always say this to people, like, I grew up watching Jose Mourinho manage my club. Like, I'm perfectly happy to see my team do that. I'd much prefer to win. And I do just think that's like a bit of an ideological difference between Chelsea and certain other clubs in general anyway. But yes, I do think that will be, well, I hope that that's the plan, because I think right now that's what Chelsea are best at doing. I was really impressed against Manchester City in terms of the out of possession plan, because I think it's easy to look at it and say, oh, Chelsea just sort of sat back and defended, but it wasn't like that. It was, you know, sort of like a real purposeful way of pressing City, which until Ramirez went off, because Chelsea needed someone to like hold the ball up, and Aggie Beaver-Jones just wasn't able to do that in the way Ramirez was. But, you know, City had absolutely, they just couldn't get anywhere with the ball. And then I think obviously in the second half, as that kind of changed and the game opened up a bit, that's where the City chances came from. But yeah, I think the context of, you know, Chelsea being able to do that well and get a win against City that was really important, having not won any of the three games against City and Arsenal so far this season, I do think even though there's no way reaching the Conti Cup final was a priority, I think mentally it was really important to do that. When you take that and then add it to the fact that Arsenal have really struggled against low blocks, it does feel like a bit of a no-brainer. And I was even surprised at the Emirates about the way Chelsea played even then, because we knew about Arsenal even then. I do sometimes feel like maybe Hayes gets dragged into the spectacle and she wants, maybe she's still chasing the high of the FA Cup final, because I think that is an element of, you know, that was like obviously Chelsea's best performance against Arsenal in recent years, even though they've kind of won games comfortably in other competitions in that time. And maybe this sense of wanting to show something. But I feel like, yeah, this, with the injuries especially, the sitting back and element feels like it will be really crucial.
Yeah, and again, Arsenal last season, when they got to a stage like this, went for a back three and plonked Jen Beattie in it, and that tells you that they weren't really playing the football they planned to play. They were playing the football they had to play. But we'll talk a little bit more specifically about this game and how the teams might line up and et cetera, et cetera. I do have a question about Kadesh Buchanan as well, because I think there are some similarities to Arsenal there as well. But we'll take a break and we'll come back right after this.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Okay, so we're back, and we were talking before the break about, you know, Chelsea perhaps being a bit more compact by necessity and who they might play in defence. And I think with Arsenal's lineup, I kind of always think that there's like one surprise in a Jonas Heidevall lineup. So as much as I reckon if I predict the lineup, I'll get 10 right, but there'll be one big surprise somewhere and I don't necessarily know where it will be. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, I don't know, Russo ends up playing on the left wing or something, which worked reasonably well against Everton. But I think really the Ford, Mead, Russo front three is close to nailed on. I think it would be a surprise if Arsenal didn't go with that. You mentioned, you know, we were talking about Chelsea's defence beforehand and the fact that Kadaish Buchanan, who was a big signing from Lyon, just isn't getting into the team at the moment. And you yourself described the signing as a flop. And I think what's really interesting in elite women's football is the absolute poverty of left-sided centre-halves. Like, Arsenal had Hafaeli, who was a bit of a unicorn, and lost her. And fortunately, Lotta's really stepped up. But Lyon don't really have it feels like Mappy Leon is one of the only ones around. And that's why I think Dominique Janssen coming on the market is going to be really interesting, because I think she's one of the few elite left-sided centre-halves. But Buchanan at Chelsea, why hasn't that worked? Because I know there was this thing at the beginning of last season where they kind of swapped Brighton Buchanan around, and she seemed to feel more comfortable on the right, but obviously she's never getting that position while Millie Bright's at the club. Like, what's kind of gone wrong for Buchanan? Because this really seemed like a slam dunk signing for Chelsea.
Yeah, I think the Buchanan thing I find a bit strange. I mean, one of the things that I will sum up about how strange I find it is there's been a couple of times where her and Lawrence have played together, and I'm like, this should be, you two have played together all the time for years and years and years for Canada. And then it's like they've never met each other before. I'm like, what is going on here? And I think some of that's on Lawrence as well as Buchanan. I do have lingering concerns about the ability to go from the French league to the English league. I do think especially when you're coming from a club like Lyon, a defender at a club like Lyon, like, really how much defending are you doing throughout a season? Although, you know, Buchanan, when she came through, was seen as being a very, very good defender. But obviously, she did kind of end up losing her place to Mbok, basically, by the time she's finished there. And I'm sure she'll have been as thrilled as I was seeing Sonia Bonpasta link. So I think there's been an extent to which it just feels like she's never caught up to the pace of the WSL, and the fact that you can't sort of dally on the ball, you will get robbed of it. And I think that intensity has only grown this season. So I think that's only getting more the case. Part of me does wonder, though, is that I do think the way Hayes plays, she asks a lot of her defenders, because Chelsea aren't really a possession-heavy team. And I think there's an extent to which, okay, even if it is Bompas or potentially, or whoever new manager comes in, part of me thinks sell Buchanan in the summer, it's not worked out, but part of me thinks, well, maybe, you know, it is worth seeing how a new manager wants to structure the squad, how a new manager wants this squad to play, and is there a world where your defenders are, you know, protected a little bit more, that kind of allows them to do the elements of the in possession elements of their game that they're good at? Because, you know, when Buchanan gets on the ball and sort of dances forward, she's very good kind of in those areas. She is a bit of a like cheat code in that sense. But I just think the drop off in sort of her out of possession ability means it's not worth having on the pitch. So it will be interesting to see. I think she's definitely a player who, if she is willing to stick around, if the club are willing to stick around, she feels like one of those people who is like, I could imagine her like having like a rejuvenated Chelsea career, depending on how someone plays. I just think with what Hayes looks for, when you look at the players who've really succeeded at Chelsea in defence, they're really players who tackle pretty well. And that's kind of that's kind of it.
Yeah, yeah. And even someone like Erin Cuthbert, not a defender per se, but very key off the ball player. You know, not a lot of airs or graces about Erin Cuthbert, but, you know, someone absolutely crucial. I'd almost have her as close to that third player that I think Chelsea would really struggle without. Let me flip this a little bit, since we're talking about the Chelsea defence, because there's a little bit of debate in the Arsenal fan base at the moment between Russo and Blackstenius. I think it's clear that Arsenal are trying to do a bit, just a slight repurposing of Russo, and trying to, I think Idaval thinks that she can be that like Bunny Shaw, Sam Kerr level goal scorer if she's just in the penalty box a bit more often than her inclination suggests. But Arsenal's top scorer by miles is Stina Blackstenius this season, albeit I think there are caveats. There's a hat-trick against Reading in there. Most of those goals are Conti Cup goals. And clearly Arsenal play Stina when they think there's going to be space in behind. As we've said, I'm not clear on whether that will be the case in this game necessarily. Ordinarily, if Chelsea were fully fit, I'd say there might be a bit. From a Chelsea perspective, who would you rather see, or who would you rather not see leading the line between Blackstenius and Russo on Friday night?
I would feel better if Blackstenius was playing, in my opinion. I really like Alessia Russo. I think she's a quality player. I think she's an amazing finisher. I know it hasn't really worked for her so far this season, but I do think when you like look at her body of work, okay, she's not a 20 goal season striker yet, and who knows if she will be, but she offers so much more to the team. I also really think she's a big game player, and I don't think it's really any surprise that potentially her best performance of the season did come against Chelsea in that Emirates game. I think when you look at what she's been able to do for England as well, that kind of tallies. I feel like she's someone who kind of seems to move to the level of the opposition at points. And I do also think, like, I think it's hard because I think it's obviously been a big ask for her and it's been a big move for her. And I wonder if that's kind of been overlooked a little bit, because she is a bit of a unique player, I think, because she's not someone who will just score goals. I think that means the potential upside is very big. But, you know, you've referenced the fact that lots of times for Hayes players at Chelsea, they take a season. And I think what Chelsea are quite good at doing is they normally are in a place where they can bring a player in and it doesn't really matter if they don't play that much. You don't really notice it that much, and they'll just sort of have them, and then they'll pop up next season. You're kind of like, oh, I sort of forgot they were there, and wow, they're actually quite good now. Obviously, with how Russo came in, the attraction she generates because of who she is, because she's English, because of the transfer saga. Like, in some ways, I wonder if the worst thing Arsenal did was putting in the world record bid for her, because I think it suddenly generated this incredible level of hype that I think it's okay for her to still be finding her feet. The problem is Arsenal probably didn't have that time because it felt like Idaval was so over Blackstenius. Whereas if Blackstenius is at, say, a higher level, maybe it doesn't matter as much because Jonas is happier to rotate the two of them. You're seeing them both on and off. It's kind of accepted that, like, Rousseau is fighting for a place. Whereas as it is, we kind of all understand that she is supposed to be the first choice striker.
Yeah, maybe if it was still Viv Miedema up front, you know, it might be different. And I think, you know, even the first few months of Sam Kerr at Chelsea, like, it took at least 6 months before we saw proper Sam Kerr, I think, at Chelsea.
I think probably it was a longer. Conti Cup final against Arsenal where it felt like she really clicked. So
Yeah. And, you know, like, and then reaching an even higher level took even longer than that. Yeah, I'm pretty positive about Rousseau. I kind of, assuming I've got the vision right, I think I see it. And that goal she scores against Tottenham the other week, I just think that's the sort of goal in a deep block. Like, that's the kind of thing I think Arsenal really want from Rousseau. They want lots of things, but that kind of tricky game off the bat. Like, I've seen dozens of 1-0 Kerr Chelsea games like that. You know what I mean? Where Chelsea aren't amazing off the back of an international break, but Sam Kerr pops up in the 6-yard box and scores. And so I'm reasonably positive about that. I do think we'll see Rousseau from the start. How about then the Stamford Bridge factor? Because this isn't a game that's usually played at Stamford Bridge. Arsenal have a very poor record at King's Meadow ever since that 5-0 in October 2018, which, let's be honest, I think the XG that day was something like 1.8. Mm. So I think, like, Arsenal deserve to win, but not 5-0. And they've been paying for it ever since, basically. But
the XG gods always call in their favours.
Exactly. But, you know, Arsenal do have a pretty poor record at King's Meadow. And, you know, Chelsea have played, I think, enough at Stamford Bridge this season, particularly that Man United game, I think, was probably quite important, you know, winning a big game at Stamford Bridge. But I wonder if you think that would help Chelsea somehow to play not quite like the away team, but more like that team we saw against Manchester City, maybe at Everton, you know, some of those 1-0 away wins recently. Do you think maybe that's easier for Chelsea to do at Stamford Bridge than King's Meadow? Or do you think maybe it's the opposite with, you know, 30-odd thousand fans there?
I definitely think the fact that Chelsea have, for example, low-blocked their way to a 1-0 loss against Barcelona at Stamford Bridge suggests they're happy to try and do it. And I don't think it's been unsuccessful. They did similar against Lyon, and they obviously did end up conceding, but it took Lyon a hell of a long time to get through it. So I do feel like Stamford Bridge doesn't feel big as a pitch in the way that I think the Emirates or Wembley does. The ground obviously is smaller. I've got no idea whether this is just true. The perspective at those kind of grounds is so funny, because if you sit at the top of the Emirates, it looks like massive. But then if you sit in the front row, you're just like, it doesn't feel as big. So I think Chelsea have shown that they can do that game plan at Stamford Bridge. This is, I think, the biggest game Chelsea have ever played there, though. Obviously, the Champions League quarterfinal and semi-final, I just think, took on a different tone, because lots of the people who are going there don't really have a perspective of what Lyon or Barcelona mean, I think, in the women's game. Obviously, everyone understands, like, Barcelona's a big club, but I still think also that with that being like a lunchtime Saturday kickoff, it was just like a bit of a different environment. Whereas I think everyone gets that Chelsea-Arsenal is a really big game. I think the Friday night is going to make it extra intense. And I am intrigued to see what it looks like from a Chelsea perspective, because I think it will be a very mixed crowd. Chelsea obviously gave Arsenal a massive away allocation, but I also think there will be a lot of Arsenal fans in the Chelsea home end, and I'm glad I'm in the press box this one, because that would really irritate me. But I think that will like create an interesting atmosphere. I don't know how much of a home game it will feel like potentially, but from a noise perspective. But I also think Chelsea have shown that they can thrive at Stamford Bridge, and they've not played loads of big games there, but they've also, as a result, kind of been able to avoid bad game, having bad games, you know, whereas I think Arsenal have kind of got over that at the Emirates this season. And I think the Chelsea win was a big part of that. But, you know, it felt like there was a sense that Arsenal just like weren't really comfortable in their own skin at the Emirates, which I never really feel like Chelsea have had, because they've sort of built up from playing kind of like Spurs every season there to getting into these bigger games. Obviously, the Champions League games last season were massive. Then you had kind of Liverpool, United. Like, I actually think in hindsight, that Liverpool win is probably one of Chelsea's best of the season, given the level that they're performing at. Spurs as well, plus all the Champions League group stage games. So I think Chelsea will feel very like familiar and comfortable at Stamford Bridge, but it's going to be the like most intense crowd, definitely, that they've played in front of there.
Yeah, and just a little bit more on team selection. I mean, Charles Leupolz were rested. Well, I say rested. They didn't start against... Well, Charles, I think we know Neve Charles is going to start, but potentially Melanie Leupolz not starting against Everton suggests her alongside Erin Cuthbert. I know Guro Wrighton probably wasn't rested. That was more fitness-based. I wonder how you think... You know, do you think Guro Wrighton will be fit? And I'm sure Emma Hayes will say absolutely nothing about this, just as Jonas Eidevall will say nothing about anything fitness related. But, you know, how do you see, like, do you think Leupolz will start? Do you think it will be Ashley Lawrence or Eve Perisay? Do you think Wrighton will be fit enough to start? What about some of those maybe question marks in the Chelsea team that don't necessarily pick themselves?
Yeah, I think definitely midfield-wise, we'll probably see Erin Cuthbert and Melanie Leupolz together. I think it'll be interesting to see who plays ahead of them. Jelena Trankovic has started the past three games for Chelsea. She's looked really good. I feel like Jelena Trankovic has taken on the Jessie Fleming hat, in that she's the person Emma Hayes trusts to do the kind of out-of-possession work from the front. And I think that was something that Fleming was used in a lot, and I think was often overlooked, when sometimes people felt like Fleming was an important piece. If you're starting at Camp Nou against Barcelona in a semi-final second leg, you're an important piece of the team. Mm-hmm. And I think Trankovic has kind of taken on that role. But it will obviously be interesting, because Chelsea's sort of settled wingers have been Wrighton and Kanarid. And if you put Trankovic there, then you need to put Lauren James somewhere else. If Ramirez isn't fit, then maybe that answers its own question and we see LJ play as a false nine, which I personally think is horrible, but there also aren't necessarily many other options there. I think when we've seen Aki Beaver-Jones do it in the sort of 60 minutes against City, and then in the, some of the second half against Everton, I just think physically she's not capable of playing that role yet. You just want to make the most of her sort of carries on the wing if you're going to use her. So that element of the pitch, I'm not entirely sure how it will play out, mainly because it does depend on fitness. I think in terms of Wrighton, my guess would be she's fine. As I said, in that Conti Cup game with both Ramirez and Wrighton, as soon as they went down, there were players coming on for them. And I know Ramirez went down a second time, but if you watch it, she's actually like complaining to the ref that City players have like ripped her socks. It's not like she's like,
it's come off. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if, for example, that was the FA Cup final, she probably would have stayed on the pitch. That's my hope. I mean, who knows? Chelsea have a tendency for, you know, things to look one way and then they turn out the other way. So if she is fit, I do think it will see Wrighton, Ramirez, and then either LJ or JRK, depending on, I guess, exactly how Hayes thinks it's worth. I did think JRK against Steph Catley was probably one of like Chelsea's brighter things at the Emirates. So I could see if they would want to renew that potentially. In terms of Perisay versus Lawrence, I'm very intrigued, because I think Perisay has been amazing this season, but it seemed like before the Gold Cup, Lawrence usurped her in that right back role. And I don't really understand how that happened. I don't know if it was a feeling of like, okay, well, we know Lawrence is going to go to the Gold Cup, so we'll rest Perisay for a couple of weeks and use Lawrence in that position so that we can be like certain that Perisay is ready to play the games when we know Lawrence is away, or whether it was feeling that Lawrence genuinely offered something more, because I don't really understand what that is right now. My hunch would be that given the centre-back shifting, Perisay will be preferred, just because obviously Lawrence is back, but I don't know whether she'll be ready to be thrown into kind of this kind of game, having, you know, not played with this Carter and Nuskan pairing. The other slightly intriguing option, but I don't think this will happen because of Chelsea's captaincy rotations, but maybe it will, is that I do think as much as Neve Charles has had a great season, it feels like she's fallen off a little bit. It probably hasn't helped that she didn't endear herself to Chelsea fans over the past couple of weeks, and maybe there's a sort of feeling of like going a bit off the boil on that. But Charles is the person who would ostensibly be captain given the Cuthbert Charles armband rotation, but there is a potential, and we've seen Chelsea do it this season, to play Perisay at left back and Lawrence at right back, and potentially on form. I would wonder whether that is the right decision, but impossible to say.
Yeah, interesting. There's a few things Arsenal have done successfully against Chelsea recently, generally targeting whichever flank Lauren James is on. If she plays centrally, maybe that's something Arsenal can't do. The other thing that Arsenal have done against Chelsea is generally Chelsea have right footers on the left side. Something they did very successfully at the Emirates was, particularly on Charles and Carter, I think played left centre back that day, pressing them onto their left foot. But it remains to be seen whether Arsenal can do that on this occasion. You know, you reference Kanarid perhaps getting some change out of Catley in the reverse fixture. Of course, Emily Fox is back. I think she's so good she will start. I don't think there are that many question marks. I think we might see Katie McCabe at left back, perhaps until she gets her customary booking. And then Steph Catley will come on whenever that happens. But I mean, Arsenal's midfield, I lay a lot of money on it being Volti Palova with Kim Little as a number 10. I think that's kind of the preferred model at the moment, particularly in a game like this. But I want to kind of finish on one of my favourite subjects, which is goalkeeper discourse. And I've really ingratiated myself with Arsenal women fans with my takes on my favourable takes on Manuela Zinsberger. And to that end, I'm really relieved that Tom Garry dropped the news on Monday about Arsenal's interest in Daphne van Domselaar, which I didn't know about as solidly as Tom does, but I've known for a little while that Arsenal are going for a big goalkeeper this summer, and Zinsberger's contract should have been taken always with that context. But sometimes it's frustrating when you have a bit of information that you can't share and you have that additional context that other people perhaps don't have. So like for me, signing Zinsberger made a lot of sense because I see slightly pre-prime goalkeeper. I think a lot of people haven't updated their priors on her, and I think she's made demonstrative improvements. And I think it's a reasonable bet, not nailed on, but a reasonable bet that she will continue to improve. But I always had that opinion in mind with, and there will be another big goalkeeper coming in. And personally, I love the idea of it being like a high ceiling pre-prime player like van Domselaar. Now, Chelsea have done something similar, you know, in terms of literally buying the last Aston Villa goalkeeper, Hannah Hampton. And, you know, there's been this kind of Musovic burger dance for quite a while. But you asked a really interesting question of Emma Hayes when Hampton came into the team, connecting it to the loss of Sam Kerr. And I wondered if you could kind of expand on that and perhaps the Chelsea goalkeeper situation, which again, from the outside, has felt like, you know, throwing loads of things up in the air and seeing what lands.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, actually, I was thinking, obviously, that maybe one of the biggest changes between this game and the Emirates game is that was Berger's last game for Chelsea. She's not played since then. She has had an injury in that time, but she's currently not even making Chelsea squads, which is maybe a sense of how pissed off Emma Hayes will be willing to get with someone if they feel like she haven't performed at the level. But yeah, I do think it's interesting, maybe. This is something Hayes brought up herself just when I was asking about Hampton, was saying, you know, that without Kerr, without having someone to hold up the ball in that way, what Chelsea did in possession with their goalkeeper became important in a different way. And my feeling with Hampton has always been she's clearly great with her feet. I'm not convinced how good she is as a shot stopper, but she's young and I think she'll improve at that. To be fair to her, since she's come into the Chelsea team, she has been a good shot stopper. And I think that's probably, she's on, I think, the same sort of hype that Kiara Keating's been on, in that they're having great seasons, but it's not necessarily a reflection on their long-term, you know, ability as a goalkeeper, because I think they're both so young that it's going to take a while to see exactly where that irons out. Yeah, and the AKB for me is that still the best shot stopper at the club, but she's probably the worst with her feet. So Chira Musovic is somewhere in between the two. And that's why I think we have seen Musovic used in games against Arsenal particularly as well. Obviously, in the 1-1 at the Emirates last season, AKB was explicitly dropped for Musovic to play. And to be fair to Musovic, she had, you know, one of her rare, very, very good games for Chelsea in that match. So I think that has been really, really important. I think we saw Musovic start against Everton and you could see how big the drop-off was in terms of her ability on the ball, given that what Hampton's able to do. Basically, Hampton, instead of where Chelsea have normally looked to kick long to the nine to Kerr, for Kerr to win the ball, now it's all about like little clipped passes either out to the fullback or out to the winger. And that's the real focus, plus having the ability of a goalkeeper to have the ball kind of played back to them and reopen it. It feels like what Chelsea like doing at the moment is Hampton will pass the ball out to one of her centre-backs. That will, you know, trigger the press for the opposition. They come in, that opens up space for which either a fullback or a winger. Hampton then goes and just clips the ball over the top of the press. So there's been a little bit of a change with that. And I do think it'll be interesting to see against Arsenal because it was the press that Chelsea really, really struggled with and they just didn't have the ability to do that. Obviously, with Maren Mjelde playing in defence as well, they didn't really have any speed there either. So that has been a big change. I think it's been really interesting, the goalkeeper thing for Chelsea. I mean, Hayes has long been someone who clearly really prioritises the competition. And, you know, she does have darlings, but she will kill a lot of them. And, you know, I think AKB is a fascinating example of that because in many ways she's been, in my opinion, like probably Chelsea's most underrated player sort of over the past 3 or 4 years. She's kept them in games they had no right to be in.
Game at City a couple of years ago, that's a league-winning performance on its own right.
And the year we reached the Champions League final, in literally all of our knockout games, AKB like keeps, she saves.
Atleti missed two penalties.
I actually think over two legs, it was maybe three penalties they managed to miss. Tony Duggan, I think, blazed one over the bar, but AKB saved the two at King's Meadow after England had been sent off. You know, in the Wolfsburg game, again, Wolfsburg should have been much further ahead than they were, again against Bayern, and it allowed Chelsea to go and win the second legs and reach the final. And obviously the final then went to shit. But like Chelsea did not deserve to be there. Like, for me, that's a great example of like sometimes you just need one good, really good player in a Champions League run and they will take you like all the way to the end, potentially. But yeah, we've literally just seen her, you know, effectively totally chucked out of the team. I think that's bizarre because I would always prefer, even if you're starting Hampton, to have Berger on your bench instead of Musovic because, as I've said, like I think Berger is at least elite in one element of goalkeeping, even if it's not the other. And I don't feel like Musovic is in, you know, she's feels like a 50th percentile player in both those categories for me. But it is about competition, you know, and I think it is about trying to push players and trying to have them find those best performances because as soon as the mistakes are there, they get dropped. And I think obviously that's something Arsenal wanted even with Sabrina D'Angelo, right? Yeah. But the thing that's felt strange about that is it doesn't really feel like there has been that much pressure on Zinsberger. And I mean, if that's because D'Angelo hasn't been as good as they hoped, that's the situation, I guess. And sometimes that's something that's hard to play out. You know, there's easily a world where Hampton doesn't perform at this level that she has for Chelsea, in my opinion. If you look at how she played for large portions of her last season at Villa, you know, she's gone up a level. Is that Chelsea coaching? Potentially. Is that Hayes sort of mental games with her to push to the level? Potentially. Is it luck? Could be too. You know, yep. It's one of those things where it's always going to be hard to nail down a certain factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think essentially the dance Arsenal and Chelsea have been in is having these different types of goalkeepers for different games because perhaps they don't feel like they've got what Manchester United feel like they've got with Mary Earps, which is this is our every single game goalkeeper because we think she can do everything more or less to an elite level. And perhaps both teams haven't had that and have not fallen into, but kind of look to mitigate that with, okay, because like D'Angelo is the reverse of, or was anyway, I don't think anymore, but was like the reverse of Zinsberger. So it's like, what do we need for certain games? And that sometimes that's a bit of a tell that you just don't think you've got the absolutely elite model. But I think if Arsenal do get Van Domselaar, they'll be closer to that, and that'll be a nicer model, I think. But that'll all come out in the fullness of time. Jesse, one last question, and perhaps a quick one, because I've kept you far longer than I intended. I mean, from an Arsenal perspective, I consider this definitely must not lose and verging on must win. I think if it's a draw, Arsenal probably have to win at City. And that puts double the pressure on that game. Where are you in the respects of, you know, is this a must win for Chelsea? Could you eat a draw, as it were? Where are you on the kind of what the result might do to the title race?
Yeah, I think I would take a draw, especially if it came sort of as a result of feeling like Chelsea had to play in with themselves a little bit. I think, you know, with all of this stuff, the Champions League just is the priority. And the fact that we have to go away to Ajax on Tuesday, I don't think Hayes will be naive to the fact that Ajax are a very, very good team and have a fantastic record at home in the Champions League this season. Arsenal have experienced themselves that Ajax are a very, very good team in recent years as well. So to that extent, I think that will remain the priority, in the same way that when the players came off in the Conti Cup semi-final, it was probably because of that. It also does help, I think, from a Chelsea perspective, that this is Chelsea's last really hard game. I don't really count going away to United as a hard game. And also the fact that it's the last day of the season means that if Chelsea are in a position to win the title, I just think they will if they get to Old Trafford at that point, because that's what they've done the past 4 years, basically.
And United will have nothing on it.
Exactly. Basically. So to that extent, I think a draw feels like something that Chelsea could live with. And in some ways, maybe it reminds me of that, the 0-0 at King's Meadow 2 years ago, was that? Yep. I think it was a little bit earlier in the season, potentially. But
February,
again, just a game where Chelsea were just like, we're in a strong position here. If we can take something from this game, then we're happy with it. And yeah, the fact that Arsenal have to go to City on the penultimate weekend of the season feels like that's something that really suits Chelsea in that way. But I do also think the Conti Cup final element of this has made it extra interesting, because I was not sure that we would beat City, and I was kind of not fussed if we didn't beat City. And at that point in time, I was kind of planning in my head that this would be the last Hayes-Idaval meeting, and now it won't be. So, but at the same time, I think Hayes would maybe prefer the league win than the Conti Cup final win. I mean, I don't know that, but I think that would feel right to me instinctively. And I always kind of felt like that last meeting for Hayes was going to be really important to show that she could get something over him again. But now there will be something, you know, something different. And I think the Hayes-Idaval thing, I'm going to write something on this for The Athletic, because I think it's easily been the best managerial rivalry the WSL has ever had. And it's been really great fun. Like, I think despite the fact that Arsenal haven't necessarily consistently challenged Chelsea over the past 3 years in terms of like trading kind of blows over like loads of trophies, I think the fact that the individual matches have been so even, you know, big wins for Arsenal, big wins for Chelsea, really tight games as well, has been great. And I think I think that is something that will come into play on Friday night.
Yeah, I think what's also interesting is maybe the discourse space as well. I think Jonas is the first manager that's really challenged Emma Hayes on, in this press conference, I'm going to say this thing about, could be about scheduling, about wider football prize money or whatever. And the fact that Arsenal usually do their press conferences before Chelsea on a Friday. So I think that's been a really interesting dynamic that like, it feel not. I don't think this has been conscious or deliberate, but it feels like Jonas Idaval is the first, like, being kind. I couldn't really point to anything interesting. I remember Gareth Taylor or Mark Skinner saying in a kind of press conference, other than when Gareth Taylor, you know, perhaps says stuff about Jonas Idaval that upsets him. But do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Jonas is. Like I said, I don't think he's deliberately gone, I'm going to throw this gauntlet down to Emma Hayes. But I've seen a lot of scenarios where people get to a Chelsea press conference, it's like, Jonas said this. Isn't that interesting? And I feel like that's the first time that's happened to Emma Hayes. I'm sure she doesn't really care either. It doesn't keep her up at night. But I think discourse-wise, there's definitely been something there, definitely.
The biggest compliment I can give Jonas is that he's the manager I've hated the most
in
women's football history. And I think, like, for a long time, there just hasn't been many managers that it was really worth disliking, because, as you say, they were, like, there's lots of, you know, even with Joe, he's just quite an affable guy. So you could lose to Arsenal, but I wasn't like, fuck Joe Montemuro.
Yeah. Like, I remember when...
like kicking a puppy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I remember, like, losing that FA Cup game at King's Meadow last year and, you know, Jonas coming off, and there was a big chant of Jonas, what's the score? And, yeah, like I don't think I've ever heard that. I feel like I'm having a real go at Gareth Taylor, but I don't think I've ever heard anyone aim that at Gareth Taylor, for example. So I think the size of the personality has definitely come into it and been really interesting. But, Jesse, like I said, I kept you a good 20 minutes longer than I expected, but that was really, really interesting conversation. So, Jesse Parker Humphreys, thank you very much. And if Arsenal do win on Friday, I want to make sure your FB ref column has another assist in it. So thanks to Jesse, who you can catch on The Athletic. I probably won't advertise the Chelsea podcast that Jesse does, because I don't think we have much of a crossover audience, but I'm sure most of you listen to Counterpressed as I do, and some really, really great stuff on there. We will be back with another episode prior to the Conti Cup final, not with Jesse this time, although if Arsenal do win on Friday, maybe I will kind of ask for Jesse as a guest again. We will get some player access of some flavour. I just don't know what that looks like yet. So we'll have a player, hopefully two, on the podcast prior to the Conti Cup final, probably the week before that game. So I'm awaiting an email from the FA on who I've got for that, but we'll have someone for you. But until then, thanks very much for joining us, and we will speak to you very, very soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.